Good evening, friends, and welcome to the BodySlam.net official AEW post show. It's a new crew this week. I'm Mike Hamley, here with one of our amazing contributors, writers, does a bunch of shit all over the podcast here too, Mr. Kyle Sparks. How are you doing tonight, dude?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. I'm happy to be here with you. We did one post show together, and I was like, man, Kyle's so fun to do these with and talk about wrestling because he has this just this big, juicy brain full of encyclopedic level knowledge of pretty ROH specifically, but then a whole bunch of other stuff. It's insane. And I'm so happy to have you here with me, man.
Oh, you know, years and years of doing this, you know, got me had plenty of time to learn it all.
I'm gonna lock my door before an 11-year-old kid runs in here and is like, dad, I got something to tell you. But yeah, so we're here to chop it up about AEW Dynamite every week after the show, and starting tonight was, it's cool because we're kind of heading into a pay-per-view, so it was like angle. The whole night was it was like promo heavy, but then also there was a bunch of wrestling matches that still happen on the show. It was really crazy.
Well, those are an integral part of a wrestling show.
Yeah, for sure. But like, oh, they got a lot of like, we got a lot of like segment stuff happening tonight, and then but there's still like match going on in between it, and yeah, it's just like usually it feels like you have to sacrifice one for the other, and tonight no, they were just like, we're giving you buckets of both.
I switched my microphone. Hopefully that doesn't mess with the audio quality any either.
Realized no, actually, no, you actually sound much better. So that was a good call.
It was a lot of fun. It moved a lot of things forward. I know. I know we got a lot of people excited for some things that are not necessarily being promised at Full Gear, but are being very heavily teased. We'll get to that in a little bit, but
for sure.
Yeah, let's dive in.
We opened up with this is just a whole bunch of storylines coming together in one big pot of, well, let's just put everything in one match. And we got the Guns and Swerve in Our Glory versus the Acclaimed and FTR. You know, we have the Guns and FTR feud intersecting with Swerve in Our Glory and the Acclaimed's feud, but also FTR wants the AEW tag titles because why not? They're belt collecting tag titles now. And the Guns just want to drive FTR nuts. Like everything, just it all. It's just all one big like tag team orgy of story going on here.
Yeah, there's a little bit of you know, I enjoy watching my New Japan, and I there's definitely a little bit of the almost a road to kind of vibe of this with the kind of multi-man tag, you know, that New Japan loves to do those on their road to shows where they'll just throw everybody in and get two or three matches worth of content in one big multi-man. And we got something similar to that here. Like you say, FTR's got issues with basically everybody in here in one way or another, because you had Swerve in Our Glory that kept him from the number one contendership. You had the Guns being the Guns, and and then you had the Acclaimed, obviously, you know, being the champs, and FTR wanting to collect the belts before they lose any more. If I'm being honest, I think there's a very real chance that FTR loses those Ring of Honor titles to possibly to the Kingdom, maybe at Final Battle. You know, that could be a possibility. And New Japan has said they're going to be at Wrestle Kingdom. I don't think New Japan has said it. I think Meltzer has said it. Somebody has said it.
They retained on their trip over there this weekend. Yes. And Tag League starts this month.
Yes,
so
it does.
The Tag League winner gets the Tokyo Dome title shot. And if FTR just retained, it's pretty much, it's just inevitable, really.
Yeah. The prevailing logic is that FTR is going to lose the IWGP tag titles at the Tokyo Dome to whoever wins World Tag League. And it was surprising that they weren't in World Tag League either. I talked about this on Twitter, actually, because this is the third time in the last 20 years that the IWGP tag champions were not in World Tag League. So
it's because they've got to be in North America traveling around with AEW and feuding with the Gun Club.
Well, World Tag League doesn't start until the Monday after Full Gear.
Oh, well, okay.
So I don't know what the cause was, but for whatever reason, they're not in it. We could get into that. That's probably another show. This was bonkers. I don't have a beat on how long it actually ran, but it felt like it didn't need to run as long as it did.
It was close to 20 minutes. We were 20 minutes into the show by the time the match ended, we'd moved on to the next thing.
I don't think this necessarily needed it was a lot of fun.
I don't think it necessarily needed
20 minutes though.
I'd kind of like, it was weird. I spent the whole, because I watch Dynamite every week with some homies in Discord, and we're in a voice chat together. So I spent the whole first, basically the first quarter of the show, not only half paying attention to the match and just talking to my buddy. And then after they came out of the picture in picture, they just cranked it up. And I was like, we could have just got to this part sooner and would have taken nothing away from the match, but it's an 8-man tag and it's a bunch of big stars and the Gun Club. So we have to let everyone get in there.
Yeah. And the Gun Club, I enjoy the Gun Club, truth be told. I think they got a lot of promise. I think they're going to be a great building block for the tag division at some point. I will never understand why the kids of Billy Gunn insist on dressing 1992 Shawn Michaels.
They stole that entrance gear from that was actual gear that Shawn must have given their dad as here you go, take something from my career. And they're just they found it in his closet. And we're we're wearing this.
It's uncanny, but this was it did what it was supposed to do. It advanced all the stories. We had a really nice moment, and I was genuinely surprised by it as the entrance came down.
Cassidy says,
"See,
Gun Club for life." You know what?
See, I'm not the only one. See, there you go. Thank you, Cass.
I rag on them, but they're right up there with 2.0 over me as far as people in AEW who can lose every single match they have, but they're always going to be the perfect team to just, you need a few week program with someone, or just a couple matches where you need somebody to get a bunch of heat against the babyface. It's easy. Gun Club 2.0.
Yeah.
Perfect role. Well, indispensable.
Well, you had and you had Billy Gunn come out after the entrances. The Acclaimed was announced as coming out with Billy Gunn, but Billy wasn't with them, which I thought was odd. And then as they hit the ring, Billy sprints past them and goes right up.
That was great.
To a surprisingly loud pop, all things considered. I was a little bit shocked by that.
Daddy Ass is doing the work of his career right now, okay? Those kids get it. They know how to work in the ring and how to work the crowd, and they're just really nice when you see them meet and greets and conventions. Big fan of those dudes. Oh yeah.
I'm 100%. I'm all in on the Guns being a staple in the AEW tag division for a while. And obviously I think we're leading towards the Acclaimed. That we're obviously leading towards the Acclaimed and Swerve in Our Glory again. They're continuing to push the tension with Swerve and Keith Lee.
Yeah, that's just a whole other storyline in this whole storyline soup from this match too.
And I don't love the fact that it feels like a very foregone conclusion that the Acclaimed retains at Full Gear.
Yeah,
but I think it gets us. A split with Swerve in Our Glory, because Swerve Strickland is. This looks like a bigger and bigger star every single time out. He just looks and feels like a big deal.
for sure.
And I can't wait to see his singles push.
Yeah, his crossover appeal too. Like, that was kind of a, you know, a big thing that got talked about bringing him in, was the crossover appeal for him, and like the amount of music industry cross, like Swerve is bringing in all sorts of celebrities and attention and eyes on AEW, and getting them coverage in all sorts of like hip hop media, as well as, yeah, you know, just like sports media now and stuff. It's, he's, yeah, he's going to be something very big in the company, probably in 2023.
Oh yeah. 100%.
And we're going to start that next Saturday. Probably.
Bring it on. Let's do it. Hey, give me Swerve against
everybody.
Oh yeah. Swerve against the world.
It's so fun looking at the AEW roster. Like, I want to see so and so wrestle this guy. Like, we're 3 years in, and we just somehow got Mox and Hangman for the first time in a singles match. Like, that's how much like room they have to let things breathe on this roster with the amount of talent they have. One last thing I want to touch on with this match before we move on is the cool ass visual at the end of the match of FTR and the Acclaimed raising basically every major tag title in the fucking world outside of the WWE ones in that ring tonight. That was so much gold.
That's wild. And it's been fun. But I do genuinely think that we're going to start to see the tag belts start to slip away from FTR. I feel like that's kind of run its course. I think the Kingdom is a great option in ROH if they choose to go that route. As far as World Tag League, whoever might win World Tag League, I can go in a number of directions.
I don't remember the bracket off the top of my head. I'm putting my money on Aussie Open.
Yeah, Aussie Open is a major favorite. I would like to say somebody like, I'm disappointed that we're not doing Cobb and Okan, you know, but Okan is teaming with Hanare. The claim is that it's an injury. I don't know if it's supposed to be a worked injury or if he actually needs some time off for something, but in any event, the tournament seems to be Aussie Opens to lose. And they had an amazing match at Royal Quest 2. If you haven't seen it, it's on New Japan World. It's on a couple other places. Go find it. It was amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm getting off track. Let's move on.
All right. So next thing we had up on the show was great little promo from MJF shot on the set of Pardon My Take. Basically said, you know, tells us he's a generational talent like Bruno, Dusty, Flair, Hogan, Brock, Austin, and Cena specifically were his names that he named. Talks about respecting Mox and his grind to get where he is and be the best, but says he's been waiting for his turn in the spotlight for too long. In Full Gear, he's going to grab it. And, yeah, it's just MJF proving again that he is so goddamn good at everything he does that involves professional wrestling, whether it is talking or wrestling.
Yes, it's such a thin line that he's walking right now, because so much of what made him who he is, the heel presentation, is what made him such a favorite at this point, because the fans love to see him do what he does. I do wonder if there's going to be a point where he's going to have to be more of a traditional babyface, or if the temptation to do that will just completely eviscerate any of his support.
Yeah, it's an interesting line to have to walk with him. Like, and I find myself, like, even before this recent, like, run coming back from All Out, I just found myself, like, cheering him on anyway, because he's just, like, he's captivating every time he talks. It's no secret, I've said it, like, on a lot of podcasts, but 99% of what I actually get invested in when I watch wrestling is actually just in-ring. I'm not very much of like a promo and angle, like storyline guy. It's as long as the matches are good, I'm happy. We don't need like feeding people dogs or like, you know, punting babies or anything, like, but you know, I have like a standard with it, but like, I don't care that much. I just want to see good matches. But like, MJF is one of those people where it's like, oh no, I will give my undivided attention to this man when he's got something to say.
It's interesting that you say that, because it's a different sense that MJF is captivating in a way that a good actor is captivating, and someone that commands the screen. It's a performance that, you know, on some level is fictitious, but it's delivered so well that you cannot avert your eyes. But yeah, you contrast that with a Jon Moxley or an Eddie Kingston, where it's captivating because of how real they make it feel.
Mm-hmm.
And one is not better than the other, but they're both very different. And it's one reason that this feed is working so well, is that Mox is so real and so captivating. And MJF is just on the verge of supervillain monologuing over here. And
yeah,
like the connection just works. And, you know, I was excited for Full Gear regardless, but, you know, they're doing a heck of a job in the build. It's going to be something special.
Yeah, good pay-per-view build for AEW too. They've been putting in the work on this one basically since the, you know, essentially since, you know, the world title tournament in September.
Yeah,
it's pretty much, they've been working this. Then yeah, after Max, we got to quick little Stokely segment. Stokely Hathaway is the greatest. Dick riding without a license is dangerous.
Absolutely, 100%.
Put that on a shirt. Then we got the first match from the Full Gear World Title Eliminator Tournament. Ethan Page versus Eddie Kingston. And it was a slower match overall, but goddamn were they hitting each other pretty fucking hard through the whole thing. Like,
yes.
It
was perfectly fine. I'm very torn. I'm very glad to see Ethan Page getting this platform and getting this push. And it seems like a foregone conclusion that Ethan Page is going to win this tournament. I mean, there's an outside shot that Ricky Starks could be that guy, but it feels like it's Ethan Page's tournament to lose, which is objectively fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But I really wish it didn't come at the expense of Eddie Kingston.
Yeah.
Who has lost so many big matches in his time that, come on, give the man a win.
I feel like there is purpose to this mountain of Eddie Kingston losses that's piling up.
I hope so too. And there's definitely some of that in Eddie's history. Like, you go back to his heel turn in Chikara when he threw in with Jimmy Jacobs in the Flood back when he was trying to get back the Grand Championship. It was that sort of a thing. He lashes out of desperation, latches on to somebody that he, or something that he knows better than to get involved in. He on some level knows they don't have his best interests at heart. He knows that this is probably isn't the best thing to do, but he is so singularly focused on reaching this goal that all that fades into the background.
Yeah.
You know, and you may see something similar here.
This is that encyclopedic knowledge I was talking about at the top of the show. Goddamn, Kyle.
It was a great storyline. Loved old school Chikara. It was a fun time.
And a happy
I did want to point out something else that occurred to me though. In the beginning of this match, Tony Schiavone made the point, and he was uncomfortable about almost agreeing with MJF, but the idea that the firm had a valid point for attacking MJF. And I appreciated them taking the time on commentary to point it out, that he used the firm to get his goals and to get his title shot. And now the second they don't jump, they don't ask how high when he says jump, he fires them all and turns on them. you know, the firm are clearly jerks, but in what universe is that fair? I appreciate when the heels have some valid points.
Yeah, they really do. It's some good storytelling, you could call it.
No, I've heard from reliable sources that AEW doesn't do storytelling, so it's a...
Oh, I don't have my sound bites in this section of StreamYard, but this would be a great time for the fucking children clip. I don't know. This match made me happy because, as you know, some may know, Ethan Page is the pride and joy of the greatest city in the world, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. That's where I'm from.
Home of the first Royal Rumble.
Yes. Yes, it was. And I would almost wager my dad went to that. I'm pretty sure. We definitely went to a bunch of wrestling when I was a kid here. But it's a weird place to have it, honestly, considering because like Toronto's like an hour away, man. Like, you didn't have to drive that much farther. Like, I don't think gas was that bad in 88.
Probably not. No, it appears to be the beginning of a big push for Ethan Page. He's going to get either Roosh or Bandito next week.
Yeah, either way. Also, Roosh versus Bandito's on Friday. That's yes.
Yep.
Oh,
can we take a second to appreciate the Avalanche Ego's Edge?
I was just about to mention it. So, like it was next to my notes. Yeah, let's take a second to appreciate it, man.
Oh, my goodness.
You want to put someone away with your finisher? Just do it from like two ropes higher and your money.
Well, especially when your finisher already just involves throwing them at the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. Razor's Edge, Ego's Edge. I don't know, whatever else you want to call it. Those are the only names I like to refer to it as. But it's... Yeah, this is horrible. It's like a superpower bomb.
Yeah.
You definitely had to do it from the second rope to put away Eddie Kingston. He's a tough motherfucker. You probably would have kicked out of that if you did it off the mat.
Exactly.
During the match too, they go ahead.
I appreciate that he didn't even go for the outside or the Ego's Edge during the match, the regular version. He just went, nope, we're gonna go right away, go for the kill shot, like right now.
I like it because he didn't have to cheat or anything.
Yes.
They let my man win clean. Ish.
Well, I mean, yeah, ish. They did have stretch plum ref.
Yeah.
Nonsense. Whatever. I did appreciate that they didn't immediately go to a roll-up finish after that or something. So at least there's that. So yeah.
They're doing better than that. We don't see too many of those on Wednesdays and late night Fridays. Except for that one time that Orange Cassidy won on a picture-in-picture. That was wild.
Yeah. I appreciated that. It gives that, you know.
You still got to watch.
If you're going to promise the tape machines are rolling, then you've got to actually follow through on it at least one time.
Yeah, if you're sitting at home and you're watching the little tiny box in the corner, you got to actually watch the tiny box in the corner and not Elmo and his dad with a soul patch talking about vaccines, which is my favorite commercial ever because Elmo's dad has facial hair. I just didn't expect it.
In addition to the fur.
Yeah, well, yeah. So he's like red and then he's got like orange hair. Okay.
So speaking of Roosh, that'll take us right into the next segment.
Wait, one more thing though. During this match, they also announced that next week they're going to announce their UK debut.
Yes.
Which is weird. They just kind of tease. They're like, okay, we're going to announce that we're coming to the UK, but we're not going to tell you when. We're not going to tell you where until next week. I like it.
You know, it works. But I'm just going to point out that somebody in this on this show said on their Twitter feed that AEW's announcement was going to be the UK debut. Mm-hmm. No sources. Just brain power.
You know what? I like it. My prediction was wrong. This was you replying to the Body Slam tweet, yep, of what's going to be newsworthy about tonight, right?
Yep. And yeah, to be fair, Tony had also teased AEW programming on ITV4 or ITV in the UK. So there's kind of an idea that, hey, something might be going on, mm-hmm, and you know, so.
No, if you're talking, like, yeah, weird thing to bring up out of the blue. So.
So.
Look at that.
But, yes. And they also teased that they would be coming out west again pretty soon, and that they would be releasing dates for that as well.
Which is cool, because they're already doing a nice little West Coast loop through December and early January and then bringing it back. I would imagine if Revolution is where it's suggested to be, which is the Cow Palace in San Francisco?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. There's a lot of sands in California. I got to make sure I got the right one, you know, like Canadian. No. I'm doing okay for a Canadian boy.
100%.
100%. But, yeah, like, you'd imagine, okay, so like Revolution, they're probably going to be like early March. You might as well hit some other markets, you know, in the West while you're out there.
Well, yeah, and depending on, you know, what you're doing with if you want to be in that general vicinity for WrestleMania weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. WrestleMania is going to be out in Los Angeles again, I believe.
We'll probably get the quarterly Ring of Honor pay-per-view that weekend again.
I don't think that would be about the time. Well, WrestleMania weekend is usually when they do Supercard of Honor.
Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to double them up a little bit, because they usually run their anniversary show in February or thereabouts. So it's hard to say what's going to happen, because Tony's also talked ROH Weekly TV starting in the new year. So we'll see where that gets to.
Yeah.
But bring it back around to Dynamite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did we... Where
come backstage to Roosh.
Yes. Yes, Roosh confronting... I forgot to take notes on this one. It was Roosh confronting the Dark Order and, you know...
Yep.
Basically, Jose saying Roosh is going to win the tournament. He'll give Ten a title shot because Ten's in good physical condition, apparently.
Because he looks good and he works out, but no one else in the Dark Order will get a title shot. And then John Silver called him a Roosh bag.
I love that. I love it. I wonder if we're going to get Roosh bag chance now in Roosh matches.
It is possible. The crowd can be pretty clever. I don't know.
But don't let me down on Friday. We shall see. Don't let me down for Rampage. I got to hear it now.
All right, Boston. The challenge has been laid down. Mike's made his request.
Then, so that's a quick little segment, you know, Dark Order and Roosh still at odds. Then, get back to the ring. We see Ari Daivari in the ring, and he's trying to offer up the services of Jeeves SK or Jeeves K, also known as VSK.
VSK.
Jesus, that's a hard one to say, man. Oh, God. So he's offering up his butler in exchange for the TNT title, and Wardlow comes out, and he brings Joe. Joe doesn't look too stoked to be there. And we have ourselves an angle match.
Absolutely. I don't believe Daivari actually got an offensive move.
No. Wardlow headbutted him, hit him with the Whomping Wardlow. And that one's for my Harry Potter fans. That's that lean back lariat thing he does. Every time he does it, I think he looks like the Whomping Willow, which is the tree that beats the shit out of people in the Harry Potter series.
It's an older reference, but it checks out.
Yeah, so I've been calling that the Whomping Wardlow. I'm sorry. So he did the headbutt. He did that thing, powerbombed the shit out of him, and then we got
four power bombs.
Yeah, we got to the meat and potatoes of all this, which was Wardlow calling out Powerhouse Hobbs.
Excuse me, powerhouse.
Yes. And Hobbs comes out, a little back and forth. Wardlow says he wants, he's not going to lose the TNT title. And he also wants every other title in the company. And that seemed to be enough for Samoa Joe to go, not my title, bitch, and hits him with the cracks him with the ROH title.
Because Joe puts fools to sleep.
Yep.
And so, Joe didn't exactly do much of a, there wasn't really a much of an effort to hide this. This was not one that really shocked anybody. It was abundantly clear last week Joe was going to turn on him. It was a question of how long.
Oh, for sure.
And I sincerely hope this does not lead to any kind of a unification because it doesn't need to.
Yeah.
I would like to see the ROH world title get taken, or world television title. I'm tipping my hand a bit. I'd like to see the TV title get taken off of Joe before Final Battle, because my whole fantasy booking at this point is Joe is the one that beats Jericho at Final Battle. And then
it's a good way to get there quick.
But you know, that involves getting the TV title off him at some point, and you know, whomever might do that, but I really don't want to see the two titles combined in any way. That's just asking for trouble. But obviously at some point we're going to do Joe and Wardlow now. And at some point we've got to do Hobbs and Wardlow now. And this is, it's been great. People have been complaining about Wardlow not having a true story for his run. But the idea of Wardlow, it would have worked better if he had been more vocal about this, but the idea of Wardlow wanting a suitable challenger and then finding himself beset by monsters on all sides is
pretty cool.
And getting more than he asked for is kind of fun.
I'm wondering if we're going to get three meaty men slapping meat at Full Gear.
I could see it. And hopefully, that would be
hopefully not for some kind of winner takes all scenario, though.
Here's the thought. You do Joe versus Wardlow versus Hobbs. Both titles on the line, but not winner take all.
Oh, like a two falls match kind of thing.
No, just one fall. But whichever champion you pin, if either champion gets pinned, they lose their title.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that way you can play with, you can give high stakes, but you don't have to go into a unification or winner take all territory. And plus it also plays with some interesting things regarding strategy or what you want to do or things like that. It also means effectively that Hobbs can't be pinned in that match.
I think both of us maybe overcomplicated too much, and we can just say it's for only the TNT title.
That'd work just as well.
Either way, don't unify them, please. That's all. That's our end. That's the message behind all of this. Please don't unify those titles.
Speaking of somebody who's looking to cover ROH once it gets back to weekly TV, we need a TV title, so please don't mess with that.
Yeah, for sure. After this, got a backstage segment. Jade Cargill versus Nyla Rose announced for Full Gear for the TBS title, the undisputed TBS title. We have two TBS champions right now. We have an interim champion who's, you know, just basically said she's the interim. Nyla Rose is the unofficial interim TBS title holder.
There you go. Yeah, let's roll with that.
Yeah, she did get billed on for Rampage as the self-proclaimed TBS champion, which
and had to browbeat Aubrey Edwards into holding up the belt.
You know what was fucking awesome though? When they announced the match and they put the moving graphic up, Nyla had a title in the graphic too.
Yes,
That was so perfect. I love it. They're running with it. She's taking it to like events and shit and everything. She wore it to karaoke.
I love the idea of Nyla Rose just bullying all the AEW like production staff into making renders and graphics for her just because they're terrified of her.
It's fantastic.
More vignettes like this would be amazing. I would watch those on the AEW YouTube channel or on your Instagram, on Instagram Reels, like just at Nyla's adventures with the TBS Championship. Let's make that happen, guys.
New miniseries coming to TNT. Give her a TNT. Okay. Give her a TNT series. Rose to the Top. Right,
I'm in.
Boom, there we go. Can fulfill all those seasons that you thought you were going to get out of the other show, TNT. next up, so we have Toni Storm versus Jamie Hayter at Full Gear. We now have the TBS title on the line with Nyla Rose taking out Jade Cargill, and then the next segment we got to a third women's match on the Full Gear card. We're getting Dr. Britt Baker versus Saraya, who is quite emotionally stated that she is 100% cleared. She's good to go. She can wrestle.
And proceeded to absolutely talk everybody into the building and just dropped a absolute fire promo.
Yeah, man. Both of them, honestly, like, Saraya came out with the emotional, like, I'm back. She's like crying, just legitimately overwhelmed by emotion looking. And then Britt just talks her down, tries to put her in a hole, say she's, you know, and just Britt built AEW up into a fortress. And now superstars, very specifically, like Saraya, want to come over and come live in her fortress now and wrestle there. And Britt tells her, no walk-ins, make an appointment.
But Britt had it's my favorite type of promo. Both sides had valid points that,
yes,
without Britt helping build the AEW women's division, there's no place for Saraya to come back to.
True.
All the superstars dig was fantastic, but Saraya also having a very valid point of you've kind of been put at the top. You haven't done what I've, you haven't had to do deal with what I've had to deal with, the misogyny, the referencing her drug problems, there was great stuff to be had on both sides here. The only thing that I didn't really care for was the idea that Saraya basically chided Britt as sort of being handed her spot when there's a little bit of validity to that in the sense that Britt was beyond a certain point, Britt just became the chosen one and has been protected at all costs.
Yeah,
but to varying degrees of success. But that being said, it also it kind of buries AEW and the amount of talent that has come through there that Britt has worked and learned and grown from and beaten and so on and so forth. That you don't know how to be a star when she has been AEW's biggest star off and on for a while now.
Yeah.
That doesn't speak well of AEW. I don't love that, but in general, this was fantastic.
Oh, it was a great promo. Honestly, I'm so stoked for this match. Like, you sold it hook, line, and sinker here. I really do like what you mentioned here about both sides had valid points. It was like, Britt Baker had a very good case to be made, and so did Saraya afterwards. And then, of course, Saraya gets some offense in at the end just to show, hey, I'm definitely really cleared. See, I did moves.
Yeah, the we're probably not calling it the Rampage anymore, so we don't really know what we're calling it. But
yeah, no, that's a show now.
Yeah, it was kind of like the Royal Butterfly that Cara Del Rey used to do, you know, the original move itself. But obviously, I don't. Yeah, we'll get to it.
I'm sure we'll know what it's called when she wins the match with it on November 19th.
Yes. Because really, Britt does not need that one at all. And her beating Saraya in her debut helps precisely no one.
Absolutely no one. Next up, we had some more backstage shenanigans. We're doing a lot of in the ring, backstage, in the ring, backstage, in the ring, backstage. Actually, yeah, we'll get to a point I had in a minute when we get to the match, but we started out with QT Marshall and the Factory. Cole Carter was getting paid by Sanjay Dutt, Jay Lethal, and Satnam Singh for his fake Sting impersonation in what almost ended up being the most maligned fucking surprise in the history of history, to thankfully being not, you know, it was such a good swerve, but my God, when at first, like, I know we're talking about this week's episode, but we didn't do a show last week, so fuck it, I'm going to talk about it real quick. Man, when Cole Carter pulled off that mask, I was like, something else is happening, or this is the worst thing I've ever fucking seen.
Well, hey, they closed that circle. Everyone was like, well, why is Cole Carter, he's with the Factory, what is he doing with, because they paid him off.
And QT Marshall, the Carney motherfucker, takes the whole envelope of money and hands Cole Carter one bill out of a very padded looking envelope and takes the rest for himself. Oh my God. That's the most Carney shit. I love it.
And to his credit, Sanjay Dutt almost looked impressed. It's like, oh, look at you go, QT. Well done.
Yeah. Carney recognized Carney. These are becoming my new favorite segments, is Orange Cassidy accepting challenges at random for his title with no thought to it whatsoever.
So yeah, and doing it very quickly. Like, you can't even get the challenge out, and he is accepting.
Yeah. So Lee Johnson has joined the Factory, which, okay, cool. Maybe we'll see him. Like, he's pretty good. And, so QT Marshall starts to proposition Lee Johnson versus Orange Cassidy Atlantic title match on Rampage, and he can't even finish the sentence before Cassidy's just like, yep, sure, I'll fight you,
okay,
and
bye.
Walks off. And then we get a little like camera cut, and we're back in the same scene, presumably a few seconds later, and Trent is also calling out Jay Lethal for a match on Dynamite tonight. So,
oh no, hey. We can't forget. We also had Chuck Taylor and Danhausen entering with Trent here.
Yes.
And Danhausen referring to the Factory as a goon squad of hat people. His exact phrase. Because he was very upset with Lee Johnson for ruining Danhausen's Halloween and then joining up with this goon squad of hat people.
I came up with a match I'd like to see tonight, mostly for the lulls, but I want to see Danhausen wrestle Satnam Singh. Just so bad.
We almost saw a tease of it tonight and during Trent's upcoming match with Jay Lethal, which was literally set up by Trent randomly calling Lethal and Dutt scumbags.
Put it on the Full Gear Zero Hour or the buy-in, whatever we're doing for an hour before Full Gear starts this next weekend. Like, I want Danhausen versus Satnam Singh, and I want to see Danhausen hit the very nice, very evil on Satnam Singh. He won't. But it would be fucking hilarious. I'm a purveyor of chaos. I want all the weird things to happen, so give me that match. But the match we did end up getting was Jay Lethal defeating Trent in, hey, this was a cool impromptu wrestling match that I wasn't expecting to see tonight. And I went, huh? And then I went, okay. And then I watched the match, and yeah, I was like, hey, that was a good ass wrestling match.
It's a perfectly solid little mid-card match. It's the first time ever that Trent and Jay Lethal have met one-on-one.
Yeah.
And
it was during the picture-in-picture break that happened during this match that I realized a lot of shit's happened tonight, and it's only 9:05. That was my glaring observation. It was a good match. I was just sitting there. I was like, man, a lot of fucking shit's happened tonight, and there's like almost a full hour of this show left. It's kind of crazy.
And I do want to say, Jay Lethal picked up the win with the Lethal Injection after a whole bunch of distractions and nonsense, and Danhausen trying to curse Satnam Singh.
Plant the seeds from a dream match, man.
Lethal gets Trent, chop blocks Trent, capitalizing on the injury he did on the ramp. He attacked Trent on the ramp before the match, injuring the knee. He went back to that after off the distraction, got up into sort of a face plant out of the fireman's carry. And as he dropped him, he then went into the Lethal Injection, which I appreciated that 1-2 punch, because it gives the opponent something to do as he's getting to his feet while Lethal goes into the whole handspring element of the move.
Instead of just standing there like, okay, hit me with the thing now.
Yeah, instead of wobbling like a character in a Mortal Kombat game or something.
Mm-hmm.
Did I date myself a bit with that?
No, Mortal Kombat's awesome. Like, I don't know. I'm in my mid-30s, too, though. So, like, yeah, sign me up for some Mortal Kombat, fam. Sega Genesis, Mortal Kombat, that was my shit.
Oh, man.
Feel like a kid again. Oh, my God.
Perfectly solid match. And then afterwards...
Yep. We get the... So, I called QT Marshall the Carney earlier. We got the ultimate Carney after this match. Jeff motherfucking Jarrett. Oh my God.
Who is en route to getting paid by every professional wrestling company in the world in 2022.
Yeah. Yeah. He's on. So what, he started the year wrestling Effie in January. That was this year.
Say what you will about the man, but respect his ability to get that bag.
Yeah, so he started the year out with a match against Effie. He ends up working in WWE, leaving WWE. During this, he also wrestled for Jim Crockett Promotions for a night in Ric Flair's last match. Finds his way to AEW. The ultimate collector of other people's money, Jeffrey Jarrett.
Love it.
Oh my God.
Once again, he puts over the whole feud. He puts over their prior relationship with Jay Lethal. He puts over his relationship with Sanjay Dutt. Builds up Satnam Singh as a monster, and not just a monster with red skinny jeans.
Yeah,
propped up by that banana nose outfit up north or whatever it was he said.
Yeah, big, big Braun Strowman shot there.
That's okay. Braun will tweet through it. It'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then lays down the challenge, which is confirmed and accepted later in the night. Sting and Darby Allin versus Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal.
You had to figure it was going to happen last week, even with the guitar shot. But like this, I was wondering that because the whole time during the match too, I'm like, okay, well, there's Lethal, there's Dutt, there's Satnam. I'm like, Jeff Jarrett's going to be around at some point during this match or after it. And yeah, we did get there. I really would have loved to see him blast that poor production assistant with a guitar. I'm disappointed that I didn't get to see a guitar explode tonight.
And, I genuinely assumed that where it was, where I genuinely thought that's where it was going.
And tonight I learned that Jeff Jarrett cannot pronounce the letter T if it comes after the letter C. Just kept saying exactly the, and I couldn't help but notice it.
Oh,
said that like the, like it had a CK in it. I accents, loved it.
Accents are fun.
Yeah.
This match is going to be, it's fine. You know, it's a fine one-off. Bring Jeff Jarrett in, get a match out of him, have some fun.
And then he can go do his office duties for months.
I do not under any circumstances need Jeff Jarrett to be a recurring character on my TV in 2022.
Nope.
100% no. Hard pass.
Nope.
But you know, set up a fun match, do a one-off, you know what? Mm-hmm. Great. Have fun.
Yeah, no, that's the vibe, 100%. Please, God, no, don't give me extended periods of Jeff Jarrett in the ring, on the mic, I don't care. Just let him get let him get his sting match in, and then...
I'm also trying to figure out how this can facilitate or move us towards Darby and Sting eventually breaking up, because it feels like that relationship has done about its course. Like, it feels like there's not a whole lot more you can get there. I feel like at some point it's going to start inhibiting Darby's growth a little bit, but, you know, maybe that's just me.
I don't know. On one hand, I'm like, it's going to happen eventually. But on the other hand, I'm like, if it doesn't, I don't care. They're just a cool uncle and his nephew just out there beating people with baseball bats and
jumping off high places.
Yeah, jumping off of balconies and all sorts of different shit in arenas.
I was gonna say your relationship with a cool uncle was wildly different than mine, apparently.
Yeah, no, I don't. I can only assume, like,
because I did not go jumping off stuff. That was a different thing.
Yeah, and so we got Jeff Jarrett. After him, Moxley comes out, hanging out with William Regal in the ring.
Oh no, we get Jungle Boy.
Oh, we did. Yes, that's right, Jungle Boy. Got to talk his shit about Christian Cage and Luchasaurus, and we're gonna actually have a face to face with all three of them on Friday on Rampage. That should be interesting. Christian Cage is presumably still pretty fucking hurt, so
Jungle Boy will make his challenge on Rampage on Friday, face to face. I got to assume that it's another match with Luchasaurus, but one has to wonder what gimmick they go to at this point.
The amount of bad blood and hatred going on here, I don't even know if AEW would sanction such a match.
Maybe we go lights out. Could be fun.
AEW. I thought more than anything, that's honestly kind of where like Christian and Jungle Boy was gonna head, but like I know his like what the injury he suffered to his arm he's gonna be like out for a bit longer, you know, in the next year perhaps even. So
I'd imagine. So
I don't know how long you can
probably some kind of a street fight or something with Luchasaurus.
Someone's got to get murdered so hard that we don't see them on TV for long enough for this feud to feel fresh when they pick it up when Christian's healthy next year.
Yeah, right. But that's a tricky part with where they've built this to now, though, which is the obvious answer is for Luchasaurus to do that to Jungle Boy. But the problem there is you've already beaten him a couple times. You really can't do that again and not have Jungle Boy look like some sort of a pathetic, poor loser when he comes back.
Yeah. It's a tough position to be in, because then if it goes the other way too, it's like, okay, so we don't see Luchasaurus for a while, but like, how do you bring him and Christian back? And, you know, it's both sides of it are, it's what an untimely point in the storyline for Christian to suffer an actual injury. We'll just I'll leave it there. That like, also, absolutely. I give everything that's happening with the story a whole lot of leeway because of that injury. And obviously, like, that puts a wrench in your you know, your whole culmination of everything that they're doing with each other right now.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, after this, though,
now we go to Moxley.
So now we got Moxley chilling in the ring with William Regal. Reflects on his 2020 All Out meeting with Maxwell Jacob Friedman, and then we end up, he talks about how MJF calls himself a pillar, but he doesn't know what it's like to have felt weight on his shoulders, and MJF calls himself the devil, and then lists all the horrible shit he's seen, and says that MJF ain't it, basically, and.
As if
MJF in the part of my take studio earlier wasn't already just like, I just wanted to be next Saturday. I want to see these guys fight so bad now.
Yeah. Also, I want to point out that the build to that match at All Out 2020, if I'm not mistaken, was also the AEW debut of Smart Mark Sterling as MJF's lawyer.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Who got the paradigm shift banned for that match, if you'll recall. Then Mox took advantage of a ref bump, hit him with it anyway, and and won the match, which was an interesting choice. But I love the fact that they've tried to draw parallels between young Mox and young MJF. I love Regal taking on Moxley, especially embracing the teacher role, because he didn't say, you know, he said we're teachers. You know, I love the idea of him sort of stepping into that as well in character.
Yeah.
Of like sort of, and you almost heard him say tonight how he hopes that MJF does rise up and take that belt one day and, you know, leads this company. You know, it was unspoken, but there's definitely a sense of, you know, I'm pushing 40. I'm not going to be able to do this that much longer. I want to make sure that you, as the next generation, are ready to do this. And if I have to kick your ass along the way, more is the better.
Yeah, the back end of his promo kind of felt like there was a lot of like, this is. Like the talking about the responsibilities that come with being champion and all the weight it carries and stuff, I almost felt kind of like, this is what you will one day have to bear. Get yourself ready for it.
I think that one day might be Saturday.
Oh, definitely. I'd love it. You know, especially like, you know, you look at the tournament bracket and stuff and it's like, okay, well, I feel like we're heading to Ethan Page winning this tournament too, which... Like, that's an automatic good 3-week program to head into Winter is Coming with. And also, oh, those guys would cook each other on a mic. Ethan Page getting to open his mouth too without a mouth. Yep. I know he's with the firm, so Stokely will mouthpiece him a little bit, but I do like that, like, you know, they recognize that he is plenty capable of doing it on his own, and Stokely usually does not have to mouthpiece for him.
No.
Yeah, he almost like builds up to like, I'm going to talk shit for all the other rest of the firm and then pass it off to Ethan Page. So
it'll be great. I'm loving it. I'm looking forward to it. MJF's coronation is at hand, and it should be a blast to watch. And Mox deserves his time off.
Yes.
If you remember, he came back from vacation to save AEW's butt again. Once a certain Chicago made Punk had a few issues.
Don't get me started on fucking Phil from Chicago, man. All right. That motherfucker cost me Kenny Omega in Toronto. I will never forgive him or his dog or Larry.
Oh man. But so that's all set. Mox killed this as expected. Yeah. He's one of the best talkers going today. And
oh yeah.
The way he just can casually deliver a line is when he wraps up with, remember, everything you've done to this point has been easy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Savage. Love it. bring it on. Give me the match.
That's another one where, to me, like, part of that almost gives a vibe of like, starting next weekend, it's going to be hard for you. Like, it almost felt like there is some subtlety of like speaking directly to Max, but not in the way that the broader audience would interpret it, but more of like, get ready. It's going to, you know, get ready. It's going to get hard from here.
Yeah, this is going to suck. Get ready. And
then
you mentioned Kenny in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And, did you have anything else to say about this promo before we moved on?
No, but I do know what we got next after this.
Speaking of whom, we had another Delete the Elite package, sort of-ish, whatever you want to call that.
With a lot of Full Gear graphics mixed into it.
Yes. A lot of the Full Gear iconography. And then there was a lot of turning back time, a lot of pictures of them as kids and growing up and as younger in the mm-hmm. business. And so it certainly appears as though the Elite is coming back at Full Gear.
I feel like they're coming back. We're going to, I feel like we're getting like tassels and neon and all that shit.
Oh, man. The Wayward Sons.
Yep. Oh, it's got to be. But yeah, okay. So we know probably we're almost more than likely, certainly at this point, getting Death Triangle versus the Elite for the Trios titles a Full Gear. I can't wait. And not only for the Elite to be back, because, oh my God, I feel so robbed. We got like three matches. Two of them, Kenny was like working, you know, working that he had ring rust and shit, and wasn't like, we didn't, you know, we only really got like one match, you know? And then I went
that happened.
And then I went and saw them in Toronto in October, and I didn't get to see Kenny Omega at the Canadian debut of AEW. And he was also hurt at Forbidden Door, which, like, poor fucking Kenny Omega now is missed Forbidden Door and the Canada debut. I'm upset. I can only imagine. He's probably like, fuck.
But I still feel like he's also being... They haven't mentioned him, but I'd be genuinely shocked if there's not plans for him to go. Like, how do you not do? I was going to say, I would have thought that they're thinking of building him for Wrestle Kingdom, but it's entirely possible that given the events of Battle Autumn that we might be seeing Ospreay and Shota Umino.
Yeah.
So maybe we're not building, because that was the prevailing logic for a long time, was that it was going to be Omega versus Ospreay at Wrestle Kingdom.
Do they have anything in between now and Wrestle Kingdom where Ospreay can just murder Shota and then wrestle Mox at Wrestle Kingdom instead? Not saying I wouldn't like to see Ospreay and Shota, but I'm just saying, like, you know, come on now. As if you can pick one or the other.
We're already into November and the best of Super Junior Tag League and World Tag League are going to go into early December. You might be able to do one on the Tag League Finals show. That's usually a bigger show where they do other higher profile things. But beyond that, I don't believe they have anything else between now and Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah, just have Ospreay murder Shota for Wrestle Kingdom. And
you know what?
His dad can come save him at the Tokyo Dome. Avenge him at the Tokyo Dome.
Between that and the Blackpool Combat Club, Mox is bringing in a whole lot of strays for him and Renee to look after. I don't know about this.
Honestly, though, like, yeah, he's just adopting promising wrestlers for the world over. He had three kids before he had his own.
Yeah, right.
After the Elite tease, though, we got another segment. Bryan Danielson. This promo went hard as fuck, him just talking about beating the daylights out of Sammy Guevara. Not really a lot to dissect about it. They were just pumping up the match for later in the evening, but God, was he intense with it. I was like, yeah, kill that kid.
Danielson is underrated as a promo. I've said it for a while now. He's, of course, top five all time in ring, or thereabouts at least. But Danielson is a very underrated promo. Dude can bring the intensity when he wants. You know, he can be funny. He's versatile. Mm-hmm. And he definitely brought the intensity here. And that saying that Sammy Guevara's face is essentially the model of disrespect, or whatever it was, that however it was that he phrased it, just like, his face itself is disrespect.
It was like the most eloquent way of saying he had a very punchable face.
Yes.
It's exactly how an educated man like Bryan Danielson would say, you got a punchable face, boy.
Yes. Yes.
He's so well-read and violent.
Yes. No, this was fun, and it built the match very well. Danielson wants to kick Sammy Guevara's face in.
Mm-hmm.
The end.
Yep. But before that, we got a prequel to the violence. We got Jamie Hayter defeating Sky Blue in a good match. It's a good-ass match.
It's 9:30. It's time for the women.
Yep. Honestly,
you've been complaining about that forever. It's just, I don't want to throw my hands up and say it's just what it's going to be, because that doesn't really incentivize anybody to make it better. But everyone's been complaining for a long time about it, and it hasn't changed.
No, we got some random like 9 o'clock, 9:15 ones, 10 after 9 ones. But, you know, yeah, it's always the like post 9 p.m. Although we did a fair amount of time to Saraya and Britt Baker in the pre 9 p.m. hour of the show, which yes. That do be a pretty big match and angle to set up. So
absolutely.
Full gear too now. I'd have to like look back in the cards, but it's gotta be like the first card where I think they've had three women's matches on the main card of the pay-per-view.
Yeah. I absolutely think so. And I don't think it's even close.
No, both titles and a huge attraction singles match of Saraya's return to pro wrestling.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I want to get back to this Jamie Hayter and Sky Blue match, because I really fucking liked it. I love watching Jamie Hayter wrestle. We had Tony Storm coming out to corner Sky Blue because Jamie's got an entourage of Britt Baker and Rebel out there with her. Jamie Hayter wrestles like an absolute beast. Her Uranagi backbreaker is just completely twisted. It's so mean. I love it. And then she spent the break, you know, getting her heat and muscling Sky Blue around. We came back. Sky Blue had a really nice comeback section of the match. And something I love most about watching Jamie Hayter wrestle is that she's a very giving opponent and elevates like everybody that she works with. Sky Blue looked fantastic in this match, and you know, she is a good wrestler already, but then Jamie Hayter is selling her ass off and taking everything in the most like, this is, you know, just making everything look like it hit like a truck.
This may have been about as good as Sky Blue has ever looked in AEW too. You know, she did very well there. I thought it was perfectly fine. It didn't blow me away. I love watching Jamie Hayter. I feel like there's two paths we can go down here, and I'm genuinely not sure which one we're going to take. One is Britt costs Jamie the title
mm-hmm.
at Full Gear and kicks off the feud that way.
Mm-hmm.
The other way is the one that springs to mind is Triple H and Batista, the Evolution turn, and Randy Orton. Triple H, yes. And Randy Orton, that turn.
Yeah.
Where Hayter wins the title. And then in the midst of the celebration, Britt lowers the boom.
Yeah. Do that, but let it not be immediately after. Let it be like Britt's got to sit there and watch Jamie be the top dog for a while and just like become progressively more insane with jealous rage.
And then the first match at Revolution.
Ooh. Yeah. See, but there's like a whole wild card in all of this, which is the health of Thunder Rosa and when we could potentially see her again.
Exactly. It's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, it's... Okay, so like everybody says on, you know, like everybody will hop on Twitter and say like how they could book the show better than Tony Khan or, you know, X promoter. But like, really? When you are faced with these weird ass scenarios, or like, you know, we go back to even like the Jungle Boy and Christian Cage thing, where it was like very obviously, okay, they're going to wrestle. And then Christian Cage gets fucking unfortunately hurt. And it's like, okay, well, now I have to like, they're too, you have, you're like too pot invested on this hand to just fold it now. You have to fucking play the hand out. How do you bluff your way to the win now? And yeah, it's kind of happening with the women's title too, with Thunder Rosa at, you know, being hurt for God knows how long and, you know, how severely. It's not something we hear anything about or have heard really about since the initial announcement early and
yeah, the
shitstorm that came with it for a week. But yeah.
Now we're also getting back to this match, getting back to Jamie Hayter and Sky Blue. I admittedly was not as into it as you were. I enjoyed it. I thought it was solid, but I struggled to get into it a bit just because at the end of the day, she's very talented. It's Sky Blue. She's there to eat the fall and look good doing it. And the question is, how long is it going to take Jamie to do it?
Oh, but yeah. No, when I wrote my notes, so like when I write my notes out, whoever wins, I just put a green highlight on it. And before I had like norm, you know, there's a lot of matches that happen where I don't get to do the green highlight before I write the notes. Sometimes, you know, there's some matches where it's like, I gotta watch the match because we don't know here. This one, I had Jamie, I turned on the green highlight, typed Jamie Hayter's name and turned it off, and then wrote versus Sky Blue on my notes because, oh yeah, absolute foregone conclusion. For me, it was more so like, I know Jamie Hayter wrestles really well, and, you know, Sky Blue can wrestle as well. Jamie Hayter's gonna give a lot to her in the match and make her look good during the match. Sky Blue, honestly, like you were saying, this is probably the best she's looked. It's definitely the best she's looked in a singles match in AEW. Her tagging with Madison Rayne lately has actually kind of like elevated her usage, I've noticed, which proud, you know, yeah, teaming with a coach probably will do that, you know, because you're building chemistry with someone who's going to, you know, the AEW features, you know, they'd be featuring the coaches sometimes. Billy Gunn, for example, geez. But she's worked a couple tag matches with her and stuff recently. Like, it she's been looking good in those too. I think
yes,
probably being under the learning tree of Madison Rayne is definitely benefiting her, especially getting to directly work with her in matches. And, you know, kind of, she's almost kind of picking up more tricks well on the job. So,
yes.
All that translated really well into this match. So that was kind of like I had to find something I had to kind of find something to buy into this match for other than the outcome, because it was definitely like the match graphic might as well have said Jamie Hayter's going to beat Sky Blue tonight. Like, so for me, it was just like, all right, well, Sky Blue's been looking pretty good in those tag matches lately. What's she going to look like in a singles match with Jamie Hayter? And promising. Mm-hmm.
The other thing that occurred to me during the course of this match was that only Rebel came out with Jamie for the entrance. And this has been happening the last couple of singles matches with Jamie Hayter, I'm pretty sure. Rebel comes out with Jamie during the intro. And then later on, Britt just is at ringside. Like, she comes out, you know, almost in secret after the fact. Like, she's not... Yeah, you're definitely giving that vibe that Britt's not 100% on board with all this attention that Jamie's getting, but you're being very, very subtle about it right now. I wonder if we're going to start seeing that be more overt as we get to and come out of Full Gear.
Yeah, there was a period too earlier in the year when Jamie and Britt were like having a lot of tag matches, and like they would, you know, people would duck out of the way and they'd connect with each other a lot. And during that little period earlier in the year, it was happening a lot in reverse where Jamie wasn't coming out right away. So it's kind of cool that they're doing it this way now. Tonight, they kind of explained it away on commentary that, you know, Britt was slower coming out because she got dunked on by Saraya earlier. And she was selling her way down the ramp, still like holding her neck and stuff. So, but yeah, it's coming. Yeah. It's going to be good when it does, because this is, you know, build wise, like we've been waiting for this, you know, it's right up there with waiting for Wardlow to turn on MJF and Hangman to win the world title off of Kenny. Like,
yeah,
this has been another one of those things where AEW has, you know, they have slow played this one, and
oh yeah,
we've cooked some very, very, very tender beef here.
All right.
And Full Gear tournament promos.
Yeah. Speaking of beef.
Oh my
God. Brian Cage.
Yes. He's going to toss Dante all over the place and advance for sure, is my guess here, because he's looking like he's going to be a pretty prominent piece of ROH, which is good to see, because, you know, it was weird. I feel like Brian Cage got a lot of slack for the like whole, you know, what, like basically for what his wife said on Twitter and stuff, right? But like, really, when you look at it, Brian Cage wrestles his fucking ass off. He is not exactly the most charismatic fellow in the world, but like, if you could find a way to just only focus on what he does best.
That's why Prince Nana and the Embassy is a fantastic fit.
Yeah, for sure. And
I'm going to go bold. I think Cage advances.
Oh, Cage will definitely move past Dante Martin for sure, is my guess
here. And I think Cage advances, and then I think he loses to Ricky Starks.
Yes. And then Bandido and Roosh on the other side. That one's kind of flip a coin. I'll be happy either way, because I know the match that, regardless, the match the two of them are going to have is going to be one of the best things we'll have seen on Rampage ever.
Yeah.
Like best Rampage moments ever might actually end up going CM Punk's return, Bandido versus Roosh.
That's possible. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, all three of those those two matches and Archer versus Starks are all set for Rampage this coming Friday, correct?
They are or were. Okay, so here's a weird thing for me that I noticed during the show was that this whole run of segments aired, and it ended with, you know, Lance Archer attacking Ricky Starks backstage.
Because everybody dies.
Yes. Which also, yay, I'm happy to see Lance Archer. I love Lance. We'll see him briefly, because he's not making it out of the first round of the tournament. He's got to go wrestle in tag league with Minoru Suzuki. So, even though the tournament will technically end before, you know, tag league, he's not going to be back for winter is coming, so...
Hey, you know what? Those young boys aren't going to beat up themselves.
No, him and Suzuki get to fucking double team them the whole way down to the ring. It's going to be great. But so Lance Archer attacked Ricky Starks backstage. Now, when Excalibur ended up doing his rundown, they were also popping up picture-in-picture graphics during the Danielson and Guevara match. And they weren't advertising Starks versus Archer on it. There was no, they announced the whole Rampage card, except they never mentioned Starks versus Archer during the Danielson and Guevara match. Every other match had its own little picture in picture corner graphic, and Excalibur talked about it, and they never showed one or talked about Archer versus Starks. So I don't know.
I guess we'll see. Maybe they're going to run an injury angle or something. Who knows?
I don't know. I hope it still happens. I had Ricky versus Ethan as the finals. We're going to bust my, like, I get all my brackets ruined this year. College basketball left me over in the spring. The Owen Hart tournament, my bracket for that one got busted. Man, you know, we're not doing too good on the tournaments here this year for me, so.
Oh, it's okay. Both the tag leagues are round robin, so no brackets to bust there. It'll be all set.
Yes, I know. Thank you, New Japan. Thank you.
But I guess we'll get to that, and we'll figure that out. I personally don't like to read spoilers, so I probably won't read them anyway. At least two, possibly three tournament matches on Friday, as well as Orange Cassidy defending the All Atlantic Championship against Big Shoddy Lee Johnson, which should be a lot of fun. Oh, yeah. I don't think anybody's really anticipating Johnson taking the title off of him, but it should be a lot of fun to see how they get there.
Snowball's chance in hell.
Should be a lot of fun to see how they get there, though.
Oh, for sure.
Even though it's not Rampage, it's time for the main event.
Yeah, we got our two out of three falls match between Bryan Danielson, Sammy Guevara. Two out of three is falls match, and it started with like 22 minutes left of the show. So it's like, all right, how are we gonna? Because like honestly, you can name two out of three falls matches that have been a 2-0, but most of them were going three falls, you know. So
the Briscoes had a whole run of them during one of their ROH tag title runs.
Just 2-0 people.
Where they beat three or four teams in a row, 2-0, and that became their gimmick for a while. That if you got out of the first fall with them, that it was a big deal.
Yeah. Which is honestly incredibly, incredibly smart way to, you know, make someone seem badass and unbeatable. Then it's like, you can't even beat us when you have three chances in a match.
Exactly.
But moving back along to this one, we addressed the, because we know AEW is going to want to take it to three falls. We addressed that real quick and easy with Sammy Guevara blasting Danielson with a chair to get disqualified and lose a fall. So,
yep.
Very smart. Got that out of the way.
It's a classic old trope. It's been around for a long time.
Speaking of, sorry, it just hit me right now. I think two out of three falls matches. I think MVP was involved in one as well. That was a 2-0. I can't remember the opponent. I'll have to look it up. Also, another thought I had during this match was like, you know, why Sammy and Danielson? Just it felt so random last week when he called him out, but I feel like there's some like sibling rivalry, jealousy, maybe in the JAS between Sammy and Garcia. And Sammy's definitely. Like, all right, I want to go two out of three falls with Danielson too. Like anything you can do, I can do better. I'd like them to team up and become the tag team known as Samuel Guevara. That's what I want. I want Samuel Guevara, Sammy Guevara and Daniel Garcia to become Samuel Guevara, the tag team. They can do like a Dragon Ball Z fusion dance and.
I mean, given Sammy's entrance video, I feel like he'd be down, but.
Right? There we go. See? Boom. Book it, ZK. Hire me. Put me in creative.
This was great. This was, if my research is correct, this was Danielson's first televised two out of three falls match in close to 10 years.
Wasn't the last one against Garcia?
Oh, yes, prior to that. Sorry. I was thinking before AEW.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Before AEW, it had been like 10 years since he'd done a televised two out of three falls match, which that's sad because I'm a sucker for the two out of three falls stipulation. But
between Danielson having two now and the Briscoes and FTR having that one, dude, we're We're bringing it back in AEW. We're bringing it back in AEW and AEW adjacent promotions.
Love it. Nothing would make me happier. I like where you're going with Garcia and Guevara having sort of an unspoken rivalry. You know, each one's trying to compete for Chris Jericho's attention. I do wonder if that's going to come into play at Full Gear with the Ring of Honor World Championship match.
In a ladder match for the custody of Chris Jericho. Boom.
There you go. Love it. Just hang one of those big boxes of candy hearts at the top of the ladder.
And no, a Fozzy record. Just Fozzy vinyl hanging from the. Oh God!
But you know we're gonna hit. You know we're gonna get that point at some point during the match at Full Gear, where you're gonna get Jericho and you're gonna get Sammy Guevara. Like Sammy's gonna get a chance to do something to try and steal a pin and win the title, and it's gonna cause some friction. And I wonder if you're gonna see something like that in terms of. How does Jericho respond to that? How does he interact with Sammy about that? Does that affect, does Garcia seeing that affect how he perceives everything?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of moving parts you can play with here for this. And the ROH world title has generally not been defended in a lot of multi-man matches. So this is going to be kind of a fun little departure there as well. This match tonight though, it was everything you'd expect. Styles make fights. These two clash wonderfully.
Yeah. It's so sad to me seeing how well Sammy Guevara wrestles and hearing the like nuclear hatred he gets from fucking crowds everywhere. Because like he'll do something amazing and everyone will pop for a second, but then they'll just start hitting him with a "you still suck" chant. I feel so bad for the dude because he's out there just wrestling his ass off. Doing all sorts of insane daredevil shit. The shooting star press to the outside was fucking crazy. The backflip DDT thing near the end of the match was just something else. I don't think I've seen anyone do that before.
I saw Rey Mysterio do it with Eddie Guerrero
in their
Halloween Havoc 97 match. In that famous match, Mysterio did that spot.
I got to watch it, but you know what? Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. That definitely screams WCW cruiserweight shit.
And if I'm going to be perfectly honest, I don't know if it was Sammy or Brian. Mysterio did it better. It was a lot smoother. But you know what? That's an insane spot.
It's
kudos a tough to one. Them.
Yeah, it was cool. Sammy getting that second fall with the GTH too. Like, you know, Brian Danielson is not invulnerable to Sammy Guevara. Sammy Guevara is certainly capable of scoring a fall on him. He did have to maybe weaken him up with a chair a bit first, but
you do what you have to do to win.
I liked the transition of the bell lock into the Rings of Saturn, for that last fall. Because he was inching towards the ropes and he was just like, no, I'm putting you away. Probably one of the most okay, so again, back to the like, I feel so bad for Sam. Somebody was in like third row with a sign that said, trade Sammy for Brittany Griner.
Too far.
Like that's, come on. Do you people hate the man that much?
That is definitely timely. She, for those of you who don't know, word broke today that Brittany Griner, WNBA star, collegiate basketball star, was arrested and charged and sentenced in Russia for marijuana possession.
Yeah,
I believe it was marijuana possession. Yeah, and word broke today. You're getting a little bit of news here in this whole AEW finance. You're getting educated too now. This is an extra little bonus feature. Word broke today that she is being sent to a Russian penal colony as well. So the story is getting very serious. We don't want too much of the intrusion of actual life to interrupt our fun wrestling bubble, but
yeah.
So that's kind of where that sign's at. And that's where we feel like that sign's a little bit,
that's, maybe too that's far. A- Yeah, that's egregious, honestly. I know egregious gets thrown around as like kind of like a you know, it's an overly used or perhaps over, I don't know what I'm talking about. Never mind. But people blow the context of that word out of proportion sometimes, but like this is the actual definition. That sign is the definition textbook egregious. Oh my God.
And
maybe pops me a little though.
A little bit. But man, that the LaBelle lock that ended this match for Danielson.
Crazy.
I just want to talk for the technique for a second. Like the way he applied that cross face, and you know, you've got bone on the wrist right here, the all that whole area. You could see a tight shot where that wrist is right over the nose. And it's just the way that's locked in and it's just squeezed in there with the bone rubbing on the soft tissue in the nose. Like that's just an extra degree of mean that is not necessary to make that hold work.
Yeah.
But I appreciate Danielson's commitment to being an utter bastard.
Yeah, he did. He wasn't kidding. He said he was going to bring it in that promo earlier and he did not disappoint. At all. Honestly, very fun match. I was like, again, I was like, oh, two or three falls match, just kind of random out of nowhere, but okay. And then, you know, obviously they delivered a fantastic match. And, you know, seeing the time in the show, I was a little concerned at first. And then, well, hey, they had, you know, they're professional wrestlers. They knew exactly how to, you know, kind of do away with a fall real quick. Put on a fantastic match. Great way to end the show. Amazing main event.
Oh, yeah.
Overall, good Dynamite. You know, I would comfortably rate this one 8 out of 10. We had we had a lot of great wrestling happening in the ring. So much storyline and promo build up towards Full Gear and even just some other stuff that's probably not going to make the pay per view. But
yeah. No, I'd say it's a solid around 8. That seems like a good spot to be at. The in-ring wasn't super blowy. The main event was fantastic. The opener, I feel like the opener could have been trimmed. Maybe you probably could have trimmed 5 minutes off that and, you know, done something else with that time. Maybe give that to, you know, work in another angle or another interview or something, but you know, good stuff all around. We got the tournament rolling, getting ready to go as we go into Rampage next week. We're setting up a lot of fun for Full Gear, which is looking like a great show top to bottom. Going to have the ROH world title defended, 3 women's matches, Moxley versus MJF, the Acclaimed versus Swerve in Our Glory. Lots of great stuff there. And I've got several friends and coworkers. my partner from another show, Kylie, and a few other people from Body Slam are all going to be there. I wish I could be. That is too much for me. Can't do it. But it's going to be a heck of a show.
Yep, it's. I feel you on that one. I as much as I'd love to go. Can't be doing that traveling at all. No. 1, my back, 2, my wallet.
Exactly. Solid show. Good first show to kick off our post show reviews on.
Absolutely. And hey, it's only gonna get better next week. You know, we get the go home show for Full Gear, which I'm expecting some fireworks for sure.
Yeah, you gotta wonder if they're actually going to confirm the Elite being at Full Gear,
mm-hmm.
and if they're gonna do so in person on camera, if they're gonna make an announcement, how that's gonna go. Because we've obviously got the clear tease tonight that the Elite was gonna be at Full Gear.
Yeah,
but now how do you do that, or do you go the Last Dance route? Or I'm sorry, the first dance route with the United Center, and just and just drop rumor and innuendo and rumor and innuendo, and then
yeah, the worst best kept secret.
Yeah, or do you go back to that? Well, which would be perfectly reasonable as well.
And it's not like, it's the obvious play that's going to happen, because you know we basically know every title match that's going to go down at Full Gear, save for the TNT title and the Trios titles. So it's
yeah.
I feel it's bound to be the one.
I feel like if you're going to do the Elite versus Death Triangle for the Trios titles, you do have to announce that. You can't just have them. You don't want to do impromptu matches on your pay-per-view.
No, but best rivalry in the history of the company. So they're gonna bring it anyway.
And you know, I almost want to get past the Elite versus Death Triangle, because I want the Elite versus the House of Black.
Oh, no, well, I don't think we're ever going to like get past the Elite versus Death Triangle. I think like they'll always just find ways to circle back to each other, but they're just never like always continually actively feuding.
Okay.
Or well, they kind of like, I don't know, they are but aren't, you know what I mean? Like there's not like always like we don't see a whole lot of back and forth between them ever really. But then every few months they'll just link up and put on this fucking insane match, and then like they go their separate ways for 6 months, and then like they just find their way back to each other, and it's like, oh, well, you match of the year candidate, tag match, singles match, whatever, every fucking time.
Well, I'm also not averse to running back Omega versus Pac either. So,
yeah, honestly, I'm not averse to running back Omega versus Rey Fénix either. That world title match on Dynamite from like January was January 2021 too. That was, oh my God, that was a year and a half ago. What the hell, Kyle? Why is time moving so quickly? I'm so old.
Hey. We've all got our own time machine, and it moves in one direction at regular speed.
I hate it. All right, Kyle. Well, let all the wonderful people at home know where they can find you, my friend.
Absolutely. You can find me at Kyle K. Sparks on Twitter. That's where, for the time being, I'm at. You know, we all know that what's going on with that platform, but. For the time being, I'm not going anywhere else. So find me there. I'm usually live tweeting Rampage, Dynamite, anything else I might happen to be watching wrestling related. Any other projects that I'm working on, you can usually find me promoting there. I am also working on a project called Romanticized Wrestling with Kylie Fuller and Haley, where Kylie and I have our show, The Romantics, where we're talking Ring of Honor on that platform. You can follow us there at Romantic Wrestle, and hopefully have some fun things cooking up for that as well. And yeah, those are about it. Just about anything big that I'm doing, I'm going to be promoting on my Twitter, and I'll be here every Wednesday night now with you.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. This was amazing. Me, obviously, same thing. Twitter's right there. Camera mirrors. It's weird. Mike from Indeed. I'm not just from Indeed, though. I'm from the AEW post show here on Body Slam. And at some point, I'll Elite Weekly on Saturdays with my homie Adam. I don't know. I took a bit of a break because my back's all fucked up. So this is my first podcast back in almost 2 whole months. So, yeah. But
it was a pleasure.
Yeah, I'll be back here next Wednesday with Kyle. And then maybe one of my other podcasts is going to be back next week as well with a guest. I might announce it tomorrow on my Twitter. It's right there. You should go follow it. And of course, our socials for Body Slam are plastered right up at the top of the frame here. Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, Body Slam Net, YouTube, Body Slam Net Pro Wrestling. Gotta see if we can just get Body Slam Net on YouTube. Condense it. It's less graphics. It's less work for me. I had to make both. I had to make them.
Well, that's for somebody who has access to the account. That's not me. So
that's me. I'm pretty sure it's just like Taken or something. So
either way,
yeah,
go follow them. They're all there
until we hijack the BuySlamNet channel.
Lots of great stuff. We got Corey busting out news on the regular on BodySlam.net. We got a fantastic news team that's pumping out great stuff every day.
Constantly. So, like multiple articles an hour at times. They're Corey and the news team are working their asses off.
Absolutely. Go give them some love and check out their work.
Yep. And if you like the video, please, you know, leave a like. Consider subscribing to the channel. We you know, got a lot of content here. Talking all kinds of wrestling, independence, WWE, AEW, a little bit of everything. Might find some Impact. Might find some New Japan. Definitely going to find some Ring of Honor, especially if they get a TV deal anytime in, you know, the next like year or two.
You can go on the BodySlamNet. You can go on the BodySlamNet YouTube channel and check out the archive of the Code of Honor podcast, which I hosted with Kylie as well, where we talk a lot of Ring of Honor as well. So there's something for everybody.
Absolutely. And to all the guys, gals, and non-binary pals, thank you very much for joining us this evening. And we will catch you next week, 10:05 p.m. 10:05 live, baby.
Love it.
Good night, y'all.
Be there.